Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It appears that a lot of folks repeatedly sign up and cancel streaming services based on there being content on them we want to watch. And they have a name for us, serial churners. The potential TikTok ban is picking up steam again as a revised bill mandating TikTok parent company ByteDance divest its U.S. interest in the social media platform passes the House of Representatives. Court ruled that police can compel some suspects to unlock their phones with a fingerprint in some cases. And schools are like to ban phones in class, but parents ain't really trying to hear that. Got all this and more for you in episode 127 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly, it's your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. Mr. Car Shopper. We took our old and faithful, I'm going to call her old and busted, but sounds like she's old and busted.
Time for the new hotness.
Yeah. So got a litany, a laundry list, if you will, of problems, expensive problems, so much so that me and my wife are now debating, do we want to invest a little bit in there? Do we want to fix it all up and let it ride for another couple years? Or is it time to just put old girls, send her, you know, how the parents do, put her
in the junkyard in the sky.
Or I was going to say, you know, when the kids ask, where's the pet? Oh, we took them to the dog farm, you know, send her out there, let her go on to greener pasture. So, you know, I don't know how long cars are supposed to last, but she gave us 12 years.
That ain't bad, man. That's 2012. That's not bad.
And the stuff they want to fix is like, it could get us another year, maybe three, but we could use that money towards a down payment. So we're almost at the point to where it's like, all right, now we got to start looking for a new car, and we picky, you know, cause what we had is had a third row SUV, and it fit all of our stuff just right. All these new vehicles, they even shrunk a little space in the back. So we got to, if we take a family trip, we got to, you know, be creative on how we stack the suitcases and stuff. It's like, all right, do we want to deal with that? Do we want to get a bigger vehicle? You know, my wife, she has her anxieties around those big full SUVs like a Suburban or Escalade, no big ones like that. You know, so she's kind of like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to drive that. And definitely if she's going to be scraping the curb, we definitely don't want you in.
Right.
You know, so we're trying to figure out what's the right car then. You know, how do we go about it? Cause it's been 12 years since I've purchased a vehicle, and do I want to deal with salesmen and car lots and test drives and pestering salesmen? Do I want to deal with that? You know, is there something changed? Is there can I click a button? You know,
what's the new Carvana?
Yeah. You know,
Carvana car.
Deliver the whip right to the crib.
So trying to figure that out and just getting in the mental mode of buying a new vehicle. You know, it's, you know, going to buy a car, going to buy a house, you know, some of these things and it's like, you got to mentally get in that mode. And it's like, oh, I wasn't ready. You know, I was ready a year from now, 2 years from now, but you know, right now it's like, I wasn't mentally prepared. So I'm trying to get in the mode of getting a new vehicle. So we'll see how it goes.
The one thing that is very different now about buying a vehicle than even in 2012, cause it's like, that's a while back, but it ain't that long ago, but you have access to so much information to where I want this car from this dealership in this city that, you know, here's what the destination fee is going to be if they got to ship from point A to point B. And you literally can almost work all of that stuff out before you even get to a dealership. Now, I haven't bought, you know, the last new car I bought for myself anyway was 2012 as well. And I just don't remember having that. I mean, it was, I could look up a lot, but I couldn't look up everything to where like my dad just bought a new truck and everything that he wanted, he set up before he even went to the dealership. It was almost that he just went to a dealership, said, yeah, this is the one I want. And he had already had his loan and everything set up. Everything was done. He literally just went to the place to where they could show him where the buttons were that he wasn't familiar with and hand him a fob. I guess they don't really have keys anymore, but handed him a fob and he drove on off into the sunset.
Yeah. But the thing about that is analysis paralysis is too many options. You know, there is some solace in going to a dealership, sitting in a chair, having them give you some coffee, some water, some chips. And let them usher cars in. But nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. Now with the internet, you got, like you said, Carvana, Car Guru, Auto Trader. You know, you can see cars over in California and have them, like you said, shipped to you in a day or two. It's like, ugh, now it's too many choices. Just tell me what I want. And then I'll let you tell me if I can afford it. And then we go from there.
Right. I'm not looking forward to that process. I'm almost 10 years in with mine. And, you know, it's paid for. Like,
not having a car note is a beautiful thing.
It really, really is. And I just do not want to have to like start that process over with a note. And like you said, looking, I mean, I pretty much know what I would get. And I probably would just go, you know, straight to the dealer, just, you know, have my list of needs and wants in there. But I just don't want to start paying a car note again. I'm just
and so the crazy thing is, right? You got the money, but it's like, now you got the money. It's like, now I don't want to spend the money. It's one thing to not have money and then be like, all right, well, you got to do what you got to do. But it's another thing to have the money and be like, now I don't want to see the bank account dwindle down because of that car.
And then you got to like readjust the budget and just, it's like, I ain't trying to do it. I ain't trying to do it. I'm riding mine till the literal wheels fall off.
That's the thing with ours. It's like the air conditioning ain't working and summertime is rolling around.
Nah, not in Atlanta, man.
It's all these little things that it's like, we could fix it, but what that's going to give us, you know,
it's going to nickel and dime you for another, right. And you only going to get another year out of it.
I could have put that money towards a down payment on something else. So that's what we're leaning towards.
So y'all, let's go ahead and get into some of these tech stories because this first thing we're going to talk about, I literally just looked at this right before we jumped into our green room and they got a name for me, y'all. I am a cereal churner. Now I know I've talked about this a lot on the show, but it turns out that there are a lot of folks who, like me, regularly cancel their streaming services when they get done watching whatever it is that they want to watch. So this was a article in the New York Times. I kind of want to get your take on it because I have pretty much everything at some point during the year. But I've said this many times, it is so easy to re-sign up and cancel to these services that I just, I'm to the point to where if I haven't watched you for 30 days, you cancel until there's something on your platform that I want to watch. And then I'll just re-sign back up and watch. And then at the end of the month, if I'm not watching anything, I cancel it again. And it turns out that it looks like it's about 40% of all the streaming services cancellations and new subscriptions are from people like me to where we are just serially and continually signing up services, canceling services, signing up services and canceling services. So the question is, are you going to start to see the streaming services adapt to this to try to get more money out of folks? Because like I said, I cancel stuff when I'm not watching.
Yeah, but they already are. You, people like you, is the reason why we can't binge watch no more. These companies, they feed us breadcrumbs of a show to where it may be 2 or 3 weeks in between episodes because they know if I want to watch the whole season, we need to spread this out and get them for like maybe 2 or 3 months versus what they used to do. Netflix still kind of does this, but they're still going away from it. What you used to do is new season outs, episodes 1 through 8, and people would barrel through them in a weekend and go on internet and on Twitter and, oh, this would happen. And then, you know, they would cancel. You know, that's why spoilers. You know, if you were on a podcast or you was on anything talking about anything, you used to have to say so much. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, because they know people have watched the whole thing in the weekend. Now you don't have to do that as much because one episode at a time, pretty much everybody has watched it by the weekend. So people like you is messing up my ability.
Ruining it for everybody.
Right, to sit up from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. and watch one episode, one entire season.
That $5.99 can go towards, you know, a donut maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get why people want to do it because there's just way too many options out there at this point as far as streaming goes. I just don't have the patience or the temperament to keep track. Yeah. And go back and forth. Like if it's a service that I watch regularly, like I guess too, I don't necessarily have any shows that I'm loyal to. Like mm-hmm. I'm only watching it cause I love this show mm-hmm. or I'm going to watch it cause I love this. Like I watch platforms because mm-hmm. I do like the content on the platform. Like I have a Netflix subscription because I like the content on Netflix, not because I like Love is Blind or, mm-hmm. you know, any particular show. So, you know, the idea that I would flip flop back and forth just for a one show, like my mom actually is paying for our Paramount Plus subscription because she likes the new Frasier. Mm-hmm. And literally, I don't think she watches anything else on it. And I'm just like, listen, if that's what you want to do, that's your money. I'm not about to argue with you about your money, but, she literally is just watching it for Frasier. But yeah, I don't have any, shows that I'm that loyal to that I want to watch them and get it over with. Like, you know, like I said, I keep Prime because I buy a lot of stuff off of Amazon. I like Netflix. And then the rest of my, you know, I'm still trading, bartering with some family members for the rest of my streaming services. So, I'm not really actually paying for that much, but I am still paying for cable, which kind of sucks.
Okay. So for me, this is what allows me to do it. There are staples. So I watch a lot of Netflix between my wife and I. We watch Netflix darn near every day. So it makes sense to keep that. Between my wife and I, we absolutely watch Hulu every day because that's how we get our local channels and stuff through Hulu. So those are there. I use Amazon Prime regularly. We probably have a UPS or FedEx delivery to the house every other day. So I actively use my Prime account. So it makes sense for me to have that. So I always have Amazon Prime. But when it gets into these other ones, like Epix, there's one show that I watch on Epix. So I can't even think of what the name of the show is. Is that show where you drive into a town and you can never leave the town and it stars, I can never think of this brother's name, but he was in The Matrix. The pilot for the original Matrix. He was Link in Oz. I can't think of his name, but anyway, it's kind of a sci-fi show, kind of a horror show where there's these creatures that come out at night. And they will straight up eat you if you are out at night, but it's only at night and you have to go into your house and put like some kind of rune over your door to keep them from coming in. But anyway, that's the only show that I watch on that platform. So when it comes out, I'll wait until I'll wait until it's like, you know, halfway through the season. Then I will get, I believe it is Epix, watch like two episodes a week. And then at the end, since there's nothing else, I'll just go ahead and cancel. So I do that one regularly. I regularly cancel Apple TV because there's only a show or two on there that I want to watch. So my wife wanted to watch this show with Colin Farrell. I can't even think of the name. Sugar. That's the name of it. Wanted to watch Sugar. So we just signed back up to Colin Farrell. And I was like, oh, I can go ahead and I can watch season two of Slow Horses because that's kind of nice. Watched that movie Argyle, which was not what I thought it was, but we watched it. But ultimately, when Sugar is done, probably Apple TV goes away. So for me, it's so easy to sign up and cancel
that I don't have to
like work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like surprisingly, I have not seen the readaptation of Bel Air because it's like, it's on, what is it on?
Peacock.
I haven't seen it on there.
I haven't seen it since I stopped because I had my brother's Peacock subscription and they stopped paying for it. So I haven't seen it since then. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to. but I ain't paying for Peacock just to see it. I'm not even paying for one month of Peacock just to see that show. Like, I just don't care enough about TV shows anymore. And it's so crazy because I used to be that way. I was like, you know, must-see TV. This is my show. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. But I just don't care enough.
So I wonder if these networks, if it would be of any value to them to just allow people to buy a season of one show.
Because Apple used to do that.
It used to be like that back in the day.
iTunes TV, you could buy a whole season of a show like South Park. You used to put South Park on there. You used to put The Daily Show on there. You, instead of subscribing to, you know, you could buy the whole show.
Well, like Chris Rock said, they get you on the comeback. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They ain't making no money off one off, you know, sales. They get you on the comeback. I know my Apple TV, like I have Apple One, so I do actually use all of the things in my Apple One. So the TV is included. So it's just there. Yeah. But yeah. Well, too many choices.
Like I said, they gave me a name. I'm a serial churner. And there's a lot more folks out there doing it. Like I said, it's almost like a game to me. It's like, I want to watch this. And here's the other thing. I sign everything up on my phone. So that's the other part of it. It's make it so easy. So I'm not really having to deal with trying to, you know, come to the computer and remember. It's just like, while I'm on my phone, it's like, okay, I just finished this season. I don't think there's anything else I want to watch. Cancel. And
now let me ask you, are you like setting reminders for yourself? Cause I know like, When I do sign up for something that I know I only want to use temporarily, I got to set a reminder for myself to cancel before the trial is over or before the end of the month so I don't get charged another month. Like, that's where I get into, I don't feel like doing the work.
Todoist for the win.
You're doing too much. I keep track.
So, it, you know, like some folks are going to say I'm doing too much, but I literally say to my phone, remember to cancel by this date. And reminders just come up and it's like, oh, have I watched anything? No, I haven't. Cancel. Is it more work than not doing it? Absolutely. But it's like, it takes me 90 seconds to cancel something with the system I've got. So like I basically create reminders and Todoist, and every month I'll just look, you know, have I watched anything on here? And like I said, Apple TV, as soon as Sugar is over, it's about to get canceled. Because I'm literally watching nothing else on there. So.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I don't know if y'all were paying attention over the weekend, but the House of Representatives did some bipartisan stuff again. It seems like they really do not want TikTok to be owned by ByteDance. It's China-based parent company. So they basically passed a revised bill in the House. It was 360-58. That is about as bipartisan as you can get in the House of Representatives. And the difference is that they're giving ByteDance 12 months to divest TikTok instead of the 6 months that they had passed a couple months back. So it really looked like this is going to happen. The government is not feeling ByteDance at all. And to make matters worse, a report came out last week that there's former TikTok employees that are straight up saying it's like this thing that we did in Texas is called Project Texas, where they were supposed to bring, you know, not really divest, you know, ByteDance still owns the company, but they're supposed to have all the user data in Oracle's data center. And there was supposed to be the separation between what's happening with U.S. employees for TikTok and what's happening with Beijing. And these employers are come out and saying it's like, yeah, that's really, that's all cap. That's really not what was happening. So I think that this, the chances are better than 50% that this is going to get divested.
Yeah, it's probably going to happen in some way. It'll be unfortunate. I think those people could potentially be lying, because it was two employees in particular, and one of them has a lawsuit pending against TikTok right now. And the other one was only there for, I think, 3 months or something crazy like that. Let me find it. The other employee was there between April and September of 2022. So I'm definitely taking their, accounts with a grain of salt, because there are other employees who have actually worked there for, you know, some measurable amount of time that has said that that is not the case. The thing that stuck out to me about this story, though, in the CBS News piece you posted, Rob, I'm going to just read it real quick. The company lobbied hard against the legislation, pushing the app's 170 million U.S. users, many of whom are young, to call Congress and voice opposition. But the ferocity of the pushback angered lawmakers on Capitol Hill, where there is broad concern about Chinese threats to the U.S. and where few members use the platform themselves. Now, you know, it just pissed me off because, you know, we talk all this by the people, for the people bullshit, basically. And why would pushback anger you and not actually motivate you to listen to your constituents and actually give the people what they say they want? It 170 million people is almost half this country. TikTok US employs 7,000 people. 5 million small businesses are on a platform that have pumped $24.2 billion into this economy. And I'm not a TikTok stan at all, you know, but the idea that we keep going down this road about China is just so disingenuous.
And go ahead.
It's frustrating because it's incredible. It's just disingenuous. That's just not the reason that they're doing this. I don't believe that for one second, because all of the other social platforms are teetering on the same line of risk and danger that they keep saying that TikTok is doing. So it's super, super frustrating that it's come to this.
Right. And to add the fact, according to the article, the U.S. government has not publicly provided evidence that shows TikTok shared user data with the Chinese government or tinkered with the company's popular algorithm, which influences what Americans see. So clearly this is, well, not clearly. So you can make the point that these congressmen just see this target and see that this is an easy win, and they can say they were doing it on behalf of the safety of Americans. And like Stephanie mentioned, China, that's already a flag, a dog whistle or outright, maybe not even a dog whistle, outright, we don't want China in our business because China is a superpower, whatever the argument is for China as a whole. And they're using TikTok as this other tool as to show the Americans, quote unquote, like Stephanie mentioned, they already, the majority of them that called in really don't, they ain't on the same page, but they're using this as a tool to show that they are fighting the fight against China.
And it's just bullshit. It's like, as long as we still have Section 230, none of this shit is going to matter. As long as we don't have any sort of anything that comes close to GDPR, like, none of this shit is going to matter. I can't stand it.
I'm glad you said that, because I wanted to come back to some of your points. So you, Steph, you made the point that we're looking at TikTok, but we're not looking at all the other companies that are doing very similar things to TikTok. So what is the reason that you believe that the government is doing this?
I agree with Terrence, to the point that they want to look hard, tough on somebody. They want to appear as though they're doing something around technology. I don't think they appreciate, honestly, the fact that TikTok has been this resource for people to get a lot of truth out there that, you know, young people may not necessarily have access to. I mean, there's a lot of information going back and forth on TikTok that you can use that as a positive or a negative, depending on the type of information. But there is a lot of information on TikTok, a lot of movements being galvanized, people's eyes being opened. I think, you know, it's in our government's best interest to be able to control propaganda and control the narrative that we get to see in this country. And I think TikTok is disrupting that in a major, major way. And we want to put the clamp down on our access to information, honestly. And I'm trying not to sound like a foil hat wearing conspiracy theorist, but I do think there is a vested interest in suppressing information from our government. I do.
So here's, and this is not what I think. This is just what I think is, this is what I believe is happening based off of news that I'm seeing. Because a lot of people say, I was like, well, what about Facebook? And what about, you know, what about Instagram? And what about, and that's two Meta platforms. And, you know, what about X? They're doing the same kind of stuff. And it's like, if you're saying that, you're missing the fundamental point. I don't want to say the government does not care about your data and what's happening with your data, but in this case, the government doesn't care about your data and what's happening with your data. That's not the, it's like, you know, China getting your data is not the issue here with, you know, with Congress. That is not the problem that they're trying to foil. It's not about their data. It's not about your privacy. It's not about any of that. What it is about, and this is what worries them, is that Beijing, or I should say ByteDance, has a product that is immensely popular in this country. And ultimately, it's based out of Beijing, which means that the Chinese government has some say so about it. Now, we may not have proof of that yet, but there's nothing, you know, I believe that what our congresspeople are saying is that there is nothing that is going to stop Beijing from saying, we want this to happen on ByteDance, is going to prevent that from happening on ByteDance. And that's what the problem is the fact that they believe that we have a platform here that is based out of a foreign adversary that can sway people's opinion. And why are they worried about it? Because this is what we do. We do these kind of things in other countries. And China has put the kibosh on that. It's like, you know, just last week, they took away WhatsApp. They took away Signal. They took away a bunch of these other apps that you already really couldn't really use over there. You had to have, you know, VPNs. But now the App Store, you know, app, you know, they go into Apple and say, you can't even have these apps on your App Store any longer. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, just say that then. Say, you know what? China over there tripping on our stuff. So we're going to trip on their stuff.
They're not going to say that.
And that's basically right.
Not going to say that.
Like, stop trying to create this, you know,
like you're doing us a favor.
Right. And just create this boogeyman that doesn't exist, basically, and ruin people's livelihoods. That's the thing. I'm like, I don't think they really, really understand the livelihoods that are going to be ruined if people aren't able to access TikTok in the way that they are accessing TikTok now. You know what I mean? There are people whose entire incomes come from TikTok shop. You know what I mean? Or a large majority of their incomes come from TikTok shop. And it's just like you're cutting people off at the knees in an already precarious economy. When, you know, a bag of groceries costs $100, you're going to take money away from people, you know, even more. Like, I just cannot see how you could be this obtuse.
Right.
In thinking about how this could work.
And then why, I mean, I know the answer. Why so proactive when it comes to TikTok? Why not, like Stephanie mentioned, with the, what's it, Section 230?
230.
Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Why not be so proactive across the board?
Across the board. Oh. If we're doing it, then let's do it.
Oh, that affects capitalism. That affects the money we can make. Because trust me, if they make ByteDance, this is my opinion at this point, if they make ByteDance divest TikTok, it's going to operate exactly like Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. Well, not TikTok, you know, and, you know, X and Snapchat. It's going to operate just like that. They're going to be under the same rules. But I think what the government is saying is that, but if that happens, at least it's our folks just doing this. And we have laws that where if you are doing these things, we can go after the companies here, because it's like, you know, we can't go after ByteDance in Beijing, like we Meta in California. It's just, you know, I'm not saying that we ever will go after Meta in California, but the threat is there that we could, because it is a U.S. entity and there are things that you could do here in the United States that you just simply cannot do with ByteDance and with TikTok. So I think the only thing, I won't say the only reason, but the main reason that we keep having these conversations and why Congress is so gung-ho to do this, at least the House is because they are afraid of what the opinion swaying can do from a foreign adversary. It's like, that's just an untenable situation for them to be in.
It's already happened. Yeah. Like, we had Cambridge Analytica and it's already what are you afraid of? We've already had this from a company in our own borders. Like, it's not a genuine argument. It's really not. And quiet is kept. I feel like, you know, this TikTok is this behemoth right now. Like I said, you know, half the country's on it. And I feel like somebody over here wants a piece of that. They want their cut, because there are, you know, there's a consortium ready with the money, with Steve Mnuchin is mm-hmm. leading a consortium of people, like, ready to cut a check tomorrow. So I feel like that's a part of it as well. Like, they're like, nah, you can't be up here, you know, doing all of this and we don't get our cut. And I feel like that's a big part of it too.
The money is not the issue. The question is, even in 12 months, can you build an algorithm that is going to do what TikTok does, but without ByteDance behind it? That is the thing that, you know, we have to question. And that's why
we would have done it.
Yeah, we would have. You're probably right on that. So it's going to be interesting. I don't think this is going away. And after it passed the first time in the House, roughly around the same kind of numbers. I mean, it was overwhelmingly passed in the House the first time. The Senate just kind of sat on it. I don't know that that's going to be the case anymore, but because here's the thing, the fact that they're extending this 12 months, whatever happens is going to happen after the election. So
they're going to have to pass it now, because they attached it to the foreign aid bill and they want to make sure they push that foreign aid through. This mm-hmm. was an add on to the foreign aid that's getting sent to Ukraine and Israel, and that's happening. So mm-hmm. if all of that happens, then this is going to happen as well. It'll just be a matter of how long TikTok can tie it up in court and keep that going.
That's the point I'm making. The fact that it's 12 months before they would have to do something and it's going to be in court, it's going to kind of move beyond the election, where it's not going to be an election thing. You're not going to have folks saying, I can't believe I just lost TikTok. I'm not voting for this person. That moves beyond the election. And at that point, they don't care, you know, what you think, because it's like, you know, because
they got their job.
Politicians believe that the American politic is fickle and, you know, we'll be on to the next issue after that. So it's going to be interesting, but I have now moved to where I think there is a significantly more than 50% chance that this actually goes down, that they will end up having to divest from ByteDance and it'll be a U.S. run company at some point. So y'all, this next story here, this one, it just bothers me. And I'm sure it's going to bother y'all too, but the police were allowed to force a suspect to use his thumbprint to unlock his phone. And that really bothers me. Now, in this article, they say that this is uncommon. This is not a regular situation and, you know, we shouldn't have to worry about it. But the fact that it's just happened, the fact that you actually have a court upholding this, that you actually were able to take someone's thumb and force them to put their thumb on their phone to unlock their phone and then use what is in the phone to incriminate this person all kind of ways, just bothers me. Now, some folks are saying it's like, well, you shouldn't really feel too bad because this is like a drug dealer and they found all kind of drugs and weapons and all that kind of stuff in the house. And I understand that, but that's beyond the point. It's the fact that the police arrested him for one thing, were able to force him to put his thumb on his phone, open up his phone. And now he's being charged with all these other crimes. Now the circumstances were, this is someone who was on parole.
Right.
So he's lost his, you know, the rules are a little different for someone on parole, but still it's just like, that's just a slippery slope because it's like, if you're doing it to folks on parole, you're going to do it to folks who ain't on parole soon. It's like, that's kind of how I feel about it. What say you guys?
Well, I was just going to add, to the story about, wait, let me find it. I said dummy, but, so not only was he on parole, you know, and also, here it is. Photos, videos, and maps on Payne's phone suggest that he was dealing drugs and subsequent sorts of his home.
Oh, no one is saying he was a smart criminal. He was already caught once. There's no one is saying that. So yeah, he straight up is hustling backwards and he snitched on himself, but still.
Well, here's the problem though. Because the whole thing boiled down to the Fifth Amendment and your right to not incriminate yourself. That's what his legal defense is arguing, that his Fifth Amendment right to not incriminate himself was violated when they forced him to use his thumbprint to open up the phone. But when the judge rejected that claim, the judge said that the compelled use of Payne's thumb to unlock his phone, which he had already identified for the officers, I'm not sure what that means, required no cognitive exertion, placing it firmly in the same category as a blood draw or a fingerprint taken at booking.
They
are reaching so hard for that. Is so not true. You're the act of putting your thumb on a device to unlock it is a conscious act, and had to be made with a conscious decision after being prompted and asked to do so. You can't say, oh, well, putting your thumb on a phone is the same as somebody taking blood for, like, it's not the same at all. And the idea that they, you know, tried to shoehorn their justification around that logic and that idea is dangerous for all of us.
And then on that point, they wanted to make sure that they said, we don't want this to become precedent. We don't want to be the case. Well, I'm just saying for this particular one, we don't want to be the case that everybody then looks at as precedent for other cases. And this is how sneaky they tried with it. And I'm going to quote it. Indeed, the outcome on the testimonial prong may have been different had Officer Coddington required Payne to independently select the finger that he had placed on the phone, the ruling said. And if that were the case, we may have had to grapple with the so-called foregone conclusion doctrine. We mentioned these possibilities not to opine on the right result in those future cases, but only to demonstrate the complex nature of the inquirement. So all that to say, well, we don't want this to be the precedent because the guy could have easily used his index finger or his middle finger or his ring or pinky, and that would have blew up the whole case. But since the cop told him to use his thumb, he can't use that in all these other cases. It's like, come on, man, y'all trying too hard.
Trying to say that there's the other quote too. When Officer Coddington used Payne's thumb to unlock his phone, which he could have accomplished even if Payne had been unconscious, mm-hmm. he did not intrude on the contents of Payne's mind. So you basically telling me now you're gonna start
unlocking people out,
right? and putting their hands on their phones right. and saying, "Well, he didn't
he
even
was unconscious."
Like it's just it's stuck. It's yeah. not even a slippery slope. You're already down the slope into the mud
and, police are taking
and
notes.
Sinking beneath some bullshit that you are trying to use to justify why y'all doing this. It's crazy.
Yeah. So I read something real quick. Well, I'll let you go ahead now.
I was just going to make a quick point, but I'm going to let you go, Terrence. It's like, so this is basically what the court is telling us. If you're worried about the police getting your phone, don't use thumbprints, don't use fingerprints, don't use face unlock. And put a code up in that joker that you have to actually remember. And then you can always say, I can't remember my code. Cause like they can't force you to remember stuff. At least not yet. I don't think that's come yet.
Well,
And I was just going to add, on your iPhone, here's a tip from Brother Tech. On your iPhone, you can very quickly press your finger on the sleep-wake button and your other finger on the volume up button, hold it for 2 seconds, and then the phone has to be unlocked by a passcode.
There you go.
It can be locked with your face, can be locked with your thumb or whatever. You hold that for a couple seconds. If the folks got you hemmed up, 2 seconds, hold them two buttons, and then
you
they
said
ask
the wake button and the up. Wake. And the volume up.
Yep. Hold them together.
Just tell folks one more time so the people in back can hear.
If you have an iPhone and the folks hem you up and real quickly, you need to
get to the car.
Right. Disable the biometric portion of to unlock your phone on an iPhone. Quickly press the sleep wake button. Well, not quickly. Hold the sleep wake button and the volume up button for 2 seconds. If you do that, then the face and thumb will be disabled, and you have to unlock it with a code, which what Rob alluded to. If somebody is trying to require you to unlock your phone, say, "I don't remember my passcode."
Yeah, this is
and it works. I just tried it.
So I'm going to be searching at the end of the show how to do this on the Samsung Galaxy phone. And I'm just let you know right now, Samsung, if you can't do it, you might want to go ahead and add that feature because people going to be requesting it. And I want to be clear on this. I'm not trying to help criminals get over at all. If you are guilty of a crime and you get convicted of the crime that you're guilty of, I really don't have a problem with you being convicted of a crime that you're guilty of. But I do know that we have some laws in this country that you don't have to incriminate. You know, you can plead the fifth. And it's like, if you are using your phone to basically create this diary of all this stuff, and all they got to do is just say, I'm about to tase you right fast and knock you out. I'm going to start going through your figures and figure out which one you have.
Exercise their civil liberty.
Yeah. Their lawful rights.
Their civil liberty. We can help people with that. So there it is.
Yeah. It's like I said, I looked at this. I'm like, they did what? Mm-hmm. It had me looking at this kind of stuff. So things that people may think are true, but are not actually true. Your diary can absolutely be subpoenaed and used. They can get a warrant for your actual diary and then use what's in your diary to what you have written in your diary that can be used against you. People think that, it's my diary. That's my personal thoughts. Doesn't matter. You wrote them down. Therefore, someone can actually get a warrant for them and go and use them. Now, what ends up happening a lot of times is they'll get a warrant for one thing, find a diary, didn't have the warrant for that. And that's what gets ended up in court. But go ahead.
Here's the thing though, with the diary, you don't have the diary on you when the cops pull up. So yeah, sure. The judge subpoena all these procedures to get your journal, right? With the phone, you have that phone on you.
You have it on you. There. Exactly.
And the cops are trying to figure out how to get in that phone right then and there. If the cops have to subpoena and get a warrant, you can't do it right now because you got to go to a judge. They got to plead the case. The judge got to say, all right, cool. Then they come back to you and say, all right, now we need you to open your phone with your thumb. By then
it's wiped.
Yeah,
we wiped it.
Thing, right? So I think that's what is shocking with a phone or a personal smartphone versus any other thing, a diary, a will, a safe, whatever the case may be, is you have that on you now and the cops are trying to incriminate you now. So you need to do your best to know your rights, know the way around it so you can protect yourself and not incriminate yourself.
Yeah, it's some bullshit.
Yeah, this is.
I've been saying that a lot this show.
You have, but it's like, come on now. This, like I said, it's just like one of the ones where I wasn't expecting to hear that from course. Like, wait, they forced somebody to put their thumb on their phone and unlocked it and then use what they found in the phone to go and bring all these charges for something that it clearly looks like this, you know, this dude did these things, but it's just like, that is such a slippery slope. So, and they know it, which is why they're hemming and hawing in a way that they said that we don't want this to be precedent and all those kind of things.
We just wanted this dude right now and we got him. Yeah. So
bullshit.
All right. So Terrence, one last time, we'll end this segment with this. How do you turn that thumbprint off?
Yeah. So, side note, it seems like Saray, that's listening to us live, says that the lockout feature is the same on Android. Make sure you verify that before you riding dirty on your phone. But I can tell you right now, if you have an iPhone, press and hold the sleep wake button, press and hold the volume up button. After 2 seconds, you will have to enter your ID or your passcode to unlock your phone versus biometrics.
I got an Android. Let's test that right now. So it's volume up and power. Mm-hmm. Ooh, look at that. It works. Mm-hmm. There you have it. Yeah. It works. It. It's making That's me enter in my code. So, so, you know, we're going to keep talking about phones here because here's something that is kind of interesting. So schools want to ban phones. But parents are saying hell to the nah. You know, not going to ban my child's phone. That phone I paid that good money for.
Like y'all are. I need to not like y'all shooting up the schools. I need to contact my kids now.
So, yeah, this was a Wall Street Journal article that I read, and you know, I think I read this over the weekend, and it's simply what it is. Like, you have some schools that they're saying that students are less productive in school when they have access to their phones. And when you think about the amount of time they're actually on their phones while in school, and what they're saying is that, you know, here are things that are true. Students are using their phones for over 40 minutes during the day in school. You have parents who are sending messages to their students while they're in school. And these are things that could absolutely wait until after school. So there are school systems that want to ban the schools or ban the phones. But the parents are saying, no, I'm not with that. Number one, I pay for this phone. You know, I gave it to my child. I want them to have it. But y'all have school shootings. I need to know where my child is at all times. I need to know where I'm picking my child up. You know, all these kind of things. There's just a myriad of reasons of who is going to have a phone and who isn't. And my question is, who's ultimately going to win this battle? Is it going to be the parents? Or is it going to be the school boards?
Well, I'm of two minds of this, you know what I mean? Because in the article, the initial school district in Colorado that wanted to try to ban phones did so because more than half of the school's disciplinary problems in 2022 were caused by them damn phones. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who works with students on a regular basis and talks about smartphone usage and all the rest of that, you know, I'm of a mindset that you don't necessarily need a phone in school. And parents don't need to be contacting their kid about every little thing during school hours. However, to Terrence's point, if we had better gun control in this country and kids weren't shooting up schools on a regular basis, this whole argument would probably be null and void.
Or at least they'd have a better case.
Or at least they would have a better case. But then again, on the other hand, it's like you can't have it both ways either, because, you know, parents want kids to be able to focus better and they want their mental health to be better and they want the test scores to be higher and they want all of these different things. But then you don't want to empower teachers and administrators to be able to do what they need to do. And if they're telling you it's the phone that's the problem, you know, then you have to give them the latitude to govern phone use in their schools as they see fit. You can't have it, but you're not an education professional. You know your kid, but you're not an education professional. And if this is what the education professionals are saying it's going to take to keep your kids focused and thriving, because by every standard and every measure, not having the phones in the classroom has been of a benefit to any classroom that's measuring it. So if you want to let the teachers do their job, let the teachers do their job. And that's kind of where I'm at. I think that's kind of where I'm at with that. If you want to let the teachers do their job, let the teachers do their job.
And I'm kind of like the same argument with TikTok. It's like, if you're going to say that administrators are trying to do what's best for students, then y'all need to do that across the board. Just don't finite this with kids on their phones is what, why the kids and all right. Well, you need to figure out what's best for them as far as their health, as far as what they're eating, what's going on at home. You need to get some crisis counselors in there. You need to get better guidance counselors. There is a lot of things you can do.
I agree.
To make a on top of gun control. I'm not just saying shooting up schools. I'm talking about you're trying to do what's best for students. But then on the other hand, you know, and this is totally unrelated, but still though, you quickly diagnosing kids, misdiagnosing them with ADHD because, you know, they got problems at home because teachers, like you said, they got to teach and they need to be counselors and mentors. And so it's like, if you're going to say and put out the reason why you're doing this is because you want what's best for kids, then want what's best for kids and do that across the board. In addition to trying to cut down on the disruptions that possible smartphones. I'm not saying smartphones don't disrupt kids, you know, but at the same time, it's like, all right, do that across the board. Do that for everything. Listen,
low hanging fruit, baby steps. You got to do the easy stuff, you know, first. And this is something relatively easy that they can do.
And that's the thing. It's easy. Mental health and child development and developmental issues and issues at home and issues with health and peer pressure and bullying and cyberbullying. That's hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Phones, yes.
and that's American society. We're reactionary when it comes to everything and never want to address the systemic issues that underlie all of these things. You want to treat the symptom and not the cause. But honestly, I really, you know, Saray made a point in talking about using phones for legitimate reasons in schools, like research and the calculator and all. Like, I get it, but we did all right without, and I'm going to sound real old right now. We totally did all right without phones in school, you know, for a very large portion of history. I just don't necessarily agree that you need a phone unless. And I think maybe we move into the space where the same way with AI, you know, they talk about how you're going to keep kids from cheating, you know, use AI and all that stuff. You got to use the AI and work it into your lessons and your teachings in a way that makes them have to think a little bit more critically about how they use it. And I think that's the same, you know, you can do the same thing for phones. Like, okay, if y'all going to have y'all phones, then pull them out, because what we about to do is use them for research or use them for this or use them for that. So you can, you know, you can sort of, you know, fight fire with fire, I guess. If you're going to have the phone in the classroom, you know, have them use it for something, but then that disadvantages kids that don't have phones. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody ain't got a phone. Yeah. So it's like, everybody has them or nobody has them.
And schools, like I said, I've got two kids in middle school and high school. And high schools are very technologically savvy with how they access information, how they share it with parents, and also how they share it with the kids. So it's like, I don't, like you said, on one hand, you don't want the kids with smartphones in the schools, but the only way the kid can look up their grades, the only way the kids can email the teachers, you know, so it's like, all right, pick a lane, you know.
I know.
I get it. And, you know, because like I said, I've got kids and I've locked down their phones to where the only text messages they can get during school hours is from me and their mother, right? Mm-hmm. They can't text message each other. The phone automatically silences. So, you know, I don't want them accidentally getting a phone call or accidentally getting a notification while they're in school, whatever. And I slip up every once in a while, you know, text them, all right, you got to ride home from school, you know, while school's on. And I have to temper myself and say, all right, you know, make sure you're not texting them to where it's a disruption, you know, but every parent ain't doing that. You know,
and every parent ain't tech savvy like you. Every parent is, you know, other parents are helicopter parents. So every 5 minutes they're like, "What y'all need?" So it's just, I don't know what the solution is. I'm not mad at
for trying.
Exactly.
Locking the doors on the Joe Clark, like we mentioned, locking the doors.
We talked about that last week.
It's like, we gotta do something, man.
Code 6. They're coming to the door. So here's the thing for me on this is that the studies are clear, because there are private schools in the country where they've done studies where they've shown, it's like, if we take these phones away, students do better. So there is empirical data. There's evidence out there that if your child does not have access to their phone while they are in class, they tend to do better. There's study after study after study after study. And where a lot of parents are coming down, well, not my child, because I know my child is doing well and I need to be able to get to them, you know, when I need to be able to get to them. So I don't know what the answer is. And my gut would tell me that the more affluent your school is, the more easily you're going to be able to deal with this, because you can have,
you got a Chromebook on your desk,
right,
instead of your phone that you can use, but everybody don't have that either.
So this is one I thought it was really interesting, because it's like, wait a minute. School is saying children do better without the phones. Parents are saying, nah, we don't care. We still want you to have them.
And that makes perfect sense. But could you imagine, just run with me for a second. Could you imagine a school specifically implementing this, and something go down at them schools and there's pandemonium or whatever, and they loop back to, well, the inability of students to contact, you know, that would just blow all this up. All it would take is one good time.
Only one good time. However, I will say the article did say something to that effect, and said school safety experts say that using phones during an emergency can endanger kids.
Sure.
Ringing or buzzing phones can give away the location of a kid who is trying to hide from an intruder. Parents on the line can distract students.
Blowing up the phone.
Following life-saving instructions from school personnel. So, I mean, it's like a no-win.
Smartphones are here to stay. You either rage against the machine, or you figure out a way to implement. And it's kind of like there's no one way or the other, because I agree, you know, I can see how they make the case to where you need to take them phones out of schools, but it's like that train's already left the station.
I have this picture of my mom. You know how when you go to the comedy show and you get to the show and they give you like this bag, you got to put your phone in the bag.
That's what they're using. It's the same company.
Yeah. So
some of the schools are using that same company.
So it's crazy, y'all. It's crazy.
No win.
So Steph, you had this last part here. Google may be giving parents text message approval. It's kind of related.
Yeah. Cause we talking about, you know, locking kids down. Google actually is testing a feature that would allow parents to, and to your point, I think something like what you already doing, Terrence, would allow parents to control what text messages their kids can send to other people. So you can do it on like a contact basis, like, so for any particular contact, you can be like, yes, you can text that person. And if it's somebody you don't know, maybe they have to get your approval before they can send the text message or something like that. So, it's not necessarily super clear how it's going to work yet, because they haven't actually announced it. But, is that something that we need to be doing? I mean, I don't know.
Well, the technology is there. So figure out how to implement it. You know, just don't make a stone cold, you know, concrete, what was the black or white decision. Mm-hmm. There are ways to implement with technology, with resources, with research, the way that you could make it better for both sides. You know, if their parents are saying, no, I need my kids to be in contact with me, and schools are saying, nah, but, you know, kids are dumber because they on their phones all day, then a happy medium could be, all right, schools and teachers and parents work together to use the technology that you probably already have for the most part. Of course, there are some schools that don't have none of this, but let's just say for argument's sake, this is the way to go, you know, then getting parents, getting teachers, getting administrators involved to figure out to use technology to not just hinder kids, but also figure out how to make it easier for parent, for school administrators and teachers to, you know, better, you know, teach the kids. I mean, it seems like a win-win. It's just our administrators, going back to my part, our administrators, our school boards, our school districts willing to put in the work to figure out if there's technology that can help. And if there is, how do we implement it? You know,
but then that requires, you know, on work. Top of, well, no, it, more work on top of managing maybe a classroom of 50 students and trying to teach them to read and pass these PSSAs that start tomorrow. Sure. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's our education system is so screwed up.
Yes, it is.
If it was for profit, they'd have it figured out.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, would have been figured out. They're making money off
of it. Absolutely.
Been figured it out. Well, y'all, we did not have any new patrons this week. But for anyone who would like to support the show, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. That is the Tech JAWN, where we've got multiple tiers. Any one of those tiers gets you access to our live stream and after party. That's what folks like Saray and who else do we have in here? Saray's in there. Time's in there. So we got folks who are watching us do the show live right now. It also gets you access to, for a couple of tiers, it'll get you access to an ad-free stream. So if you like to listen to the show on your podcatcher without actually having to listen to ads or scroll past them, you can do that as well by becoming a patron. So once again, head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn, the Tech JAWN, where anything that you do will help us bring this tech to you the way that we bring it to you. So with that, Tech Life Steph, why don't you tell folks how they can get at you?
And you can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph, or check out stephaniehumphrey.com.
And you can find me all over the internet at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And we're also at The Tech John on all the things. So come holla at us however you holla. Until we meet again in a week's time. Peace.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.